Nerds and geeks, hold on to your seats because it's about to go down.
Welcome to Nerdorama, the voice of the Nerd Nation. I'm Mo Kelly, he's Tawala Sharp, and together we bring you your daily dose of nerd news, analysis, and conversations with the best and brightest of the nerdverse. A DC Comics artist has quit his job over the company changing Superman's decades-old slogan. We covered this last week, changing the slogan from Truth, Justice, in American Way to Truth, Justice, and a Better Tomorrow. And we played you a Fox News clip last week. I'm not going to play it again. It's not necessary. But the gist of the clip was, America's going to hell. How dare you change Superman's motto? Why is it we have to change that? And I said that, one, Superman is not an American creation. One of the co-creators of Superman was Canadian. He landed in America, but he was never American. Never. And I think we've tried to appropriate Superman in many ways, that he was not written as a character. And it's something which has been actually talked about in the comics and the movies as to whether Superman is actually loyal to the United States or is he of the world. And I said, hey, if you want to start your own company because you think that, I would say, conservative ideals or some sort of patriotic ideals are not being represented in the comics, it's kind of weird to me because comics are, you know, a business. They're trying to make money. They're not for you and your personal pet politics. But if you want to do that, go ahead and do that and let the market decide, because I'm a capitalist first and foremost. If there's a market out there and you think that people will buy your stuff, if you think that a market is being underserved, then by all means. And a DC Comics artist, which is important, he's an artist, not a writer, he quit his job, and he did it in a very public way. He quit during a YouTube live stream session with a fellow DC Comics worker. And he said, quote, I'm tired of this ish, but actually used a profanity, said during the live stream about DC's decision to change the Superman. And as far as the son of Superman, John Kent, making him bisexual, another story that we discussed. And I don't know why people are taking this so personally, like Superman is theirs or needs to be represented a certain way. And he, as someone who obviously worked with DC and should know the history of Superman, should not be taking this so personally. But here's the point. If you want to start your own company, then start your own company. I don't know why you would need to publicly quit as if that's going to help you along the way. Now, I've never collected comics. I know you have, Tawala Sharp. I know you, Mark Ronner, have collected comics
and written.
Okay. So I think you would have a voice to add to this.
This guy is idiotic, first of all. I'm saying this. Look, his work, the history of his work is not so stellar that it's like, oh my God, the comic industry is torn asunder. All right.
That's why I said he's an artist. You can find artists. It's not a problem.
You can find artists. Okay. Beyond that, his assertion that Superman and Truth, Justice, and the American way, you know, his grandfather fought in World War II and upheld the American. Okay, stop right there. You're conflating a whole lot of issues that have nothing to do with Superman past a few issues or a story arc. And comic books, for decades since the beginning, have been about change. The original Superman could not fly. He could only leap over buildings.
Tall buildings in a single bound.
Okay, so if you don't know that Superman has been changing and growing and evolving all this time, I don't know how you got into comics, but I promise you, no one is looking for Cyberfrog. Okay, I'm sorry, let's just back up. And if this was your whole mission to gain press so that people would buy Cyberfrog, wow.
Why would you quit your job? Couldn't two things be true? Can't you dislike what DC's doing and start your company?
No, because his quitting is all based on his politics. He believes that if conservatism was given the exact same, you know, leeway that, you know, the leftists,
the woke comics
are given, then we'd be fine. But he's like, you know, he goes on and on. You can't even say what he said because there's just way too much cursing, but just blankety blank. And if this was this leftist, this and that and the other, no one has a problem. But show me someone who's supporting a conservative hero.
Mark Ronner, comic book collector and writer, what say you?
Well, I've been writing comics since about 2009, I guess, and I've had exactly one story in DC. It's not easy to get on board there. And so if that's the hill that this idiot wants to die on, good luck for him in his career. What did you mention his name?
No. This is Ethan Van Shriver, the comics gate guy.
Oh, Van Shriver?
Yes.
Oh, for God's sakes. Yeah, good luck with that.
And my thing is, if your stuff is good, people will buy it. I don't know if there's enough people out there. Put it this way. People are not buying comics today because they're woke, per se, air quotes. If it's a good story, it's a good story.
Yeah, it's art. That's exactly right. And it can be, you know, you mentioned the Superman Red Sun story about Superman. What if he landed in Russia? There's all sorts of variations on every single Batman Elseworlds stories, putting him back into the 19th century in London. As long as you do it well, there are three rules in comics. Meet your deadlines, make good work, and don't be a jerk to everybody because it's such a small community. If you're a jerk or a fascist or an idiot or hard to get along with, nobody wants to work with you. And I have a feeling not a lot of people in mainstream comics want to work with this guy after this, because if that is the hill you want to die on, that really speaks to your room temperature IQ.
Well, that says to me that if he was willing to quit on a live stream, he was probably 1 foot out the door anyway.
It was performative. If he had a real issue with it, he would have talked to an editor or something. That's what you do.
Well, this is also coming after both DC and Marvel have gone on record to say that they are going to start ousting and getting rid of those who are part of ComicsGate. And then all of a sudden we get this and it's like, okay, you felt like, hey, look, you've already given me my pink slip. Before I'm fully out the door, I'm going ham.
My thing is this. No one is stopping any content creator, especially in today's world where you can be found anywhere, from going out and creating your own thing. That was the whole point of Marvel. DC was already there. Marvel decided to do its own thing. And if you know anything about the comics industry, independent comics has been around forever. We can run down the list of all the independent comics who have made their way and turned out some great intellectual property that have been bought by movie studios. And you know it now as Umbrella Academy, for example. You know, there are all sorts of comics that are available for people. You just have to know where to look. If you make good stuff, people will buy it, and then people will buy it.
Absolutely. You've got Image. I mean, that was the big indie label.
Lion Forge.
And you've got Boom. There are so many venues to publish your own stuff. You can even self-publish it on Amazon.
Sure could.
Yeah. We've
had a number of people who have had Kickstarter comic books on the show.
I'll remember that when I do my next one. But the industry itself is not in the greatest shape of all time. And Marvel and DC are terrific venues if you're an artist. By that meaning artist, writer, anybody who's a creative. So just kicking over the card table like that, it's unbelievably moronic.
Hello and welcome to The Vi-Pile, the only online comic book review column that will be good like Renee and Angela. My name is Hannibal Taboo, and you can find everything that you would possibly like to know about me using @HANNI, B as in bounce, A-L, T as in tough, A, B as in bounce, U. That's on Instagram, Twitter, MySpace, Tumblr, Facebook, the inside of Lando Calrissian's cape, and everywhere that you would like to be. These reviews are for books that came out October 20th, 2021. A very busy week for me as I was dealing with my wife's birthday. But there are four sections to these reviews. The first, the titular Vi-Pile, is for books that were so good they demanded to be purchased in the moment or are from a series that's been great for some time. Our first book, it needs no introduction. The Orville Artifacts, number 1, from Dark Horse Comics, with the creative team of David A. Goodman, David Cabeza, Michael Atiyeh, Richard Starkings, and Jimmy Betancourt. by telling a straightforward science fiction yarn and overlaying the wildly charismatic characters from the TV series, the Orville Artifacts No. 1 completely understands the assignment. With a fully realized adventure, great character moments for many of the players involved, and absolutely sumptuous visuals, this issue is a winner. The Orville, the ship, is docked at a space station from their Federation of Sentients. They call that the Union, sure. The captain and his slacker-minded helmsman slash best friend run into an old professor who has a line on an ancient mystery hidden in the stars. Each one of them reacts differently to this blast from the past, and that framing actually serves the story as it moves into the unknown. Also, there's a super complex personal relationship here that plays into the disposition of this catalyst character, the professor. The wonderful weird science fiction presentation gives Gordon, the helmsman, a chance to play against type, which is also a very nice surprise. The script by David A. Goodman, who would certainly be the one to know these characters and this universe, it's his show, sort of, whatever, balances every element perfectly, with John hitting a perfect one-liner in a meeting, Gordon being perfectly in character, and even Ed's decision-making process shown very well. The artwork from David Cabeza, Michael Atiyeh, Richard Starkings, and Jimmy Betancourt presents an almost screen-ready, hyper-accurate look at the universe of the Orville, and there's a scene late in the book that hits very hard with that relative realism. The best part is that this is a complete story. You surely want to see what's next, but if you don't, you got a beginning, middle, and end of this story. That's a great accomplishment in and of itself, given how enjoyable that trip is and how few pages we were had to work with. This is a great book. So rating, buy. The next book we have on the buy pile would be Green Lantern No. 7 from DC Comics, with a creative team of Jeffrey Thorne, Tom Rainey, Marco Santucci, Andy Owens, Mike Atiyeh, that guy's busy, and Rob Lee. Lee? Not really sure how you pronounce that. L-E-I-G-H? I'm sorry if I screwed that up there, Rob. Anyway, with star-spanning adventures and personal emotional stakes, Green Lantern No. 7 does a great job tracking the fallout of the fall of Oa while introducing Jon Stewart to some distinctive surprises. Not the guy from The Daily Show. People mix that up a lot. There are developments big and small here, and each one is treated with equal gravitas and urgency. First of all, this is 30 pages worth of comics, virtually unheard of in these challenged times. The two concurrent storylines, Lost Green Lanterns and the Dark Sector under the command of longtime Lantern Jon Stewart on one hand, and Interstellar Politics under the command of Far Sector's Joe Mulan on the other, they each get their own section of the book. Second of all, ignore the solicitations. There's some kind of disconnect. What's described there is vaguely related to what's in the book, but either intentionally obscures the details or is not written in conjunction with the script. It's a loose guidepost at best, and honestly the same goes for the cover. Third of all, let's talk about Lonar. Lonar, one of the new gods, and if you see my review on Bleeding Cool, there's a link to his biography. Lonar is the greatest, and with a dash of the Next Generation's Q and a splash of Willy Wonka, he takes Jon Stewart on a trip across time and space to discover some things long before mankind even mastered fire. This whimsical, sardonic tone of this immortal warrior has great entertainment value and is well worth seeing. What happens here also points to a bigger story for Jon Stewart than any of us could have anticipated, which is an interesting choice. Fourth, yeah, there's more. Let's zoom in on Simon Baz, whose temper and often tempestuous emotional state gives us a whole other gear here, as the tenuous relationship with the hawkish United Planets threatens everyone. There was a quotes around hawkish because they've got a lot of people from Thanagar, the hawk people. It's an entendre. I'm trying to be clever. I'm going to just go back to the review. The last page was a refreshing, surprising beat that really made this work connect. When you look at the names behind it, writer Jeffrey Thorne, art from Tom Rainey, Marco Santucci, finishes by Andy Owens, colors by Mike Atiyeh, letters by Rob Lee. I'm going to go with Lee. You'll have one of those forehead-slapping moments and say, of course. Everybody here understands the assignment and is done at a high degree of skill and craft. This new run has been very engaging, and this issue is another gem in that run. The rating would be buy. Okay, now the next one. Hang on to your hats now. This next one's a bit of a surprise. The next one on the Buy Pile is Eat the Rich, number 3 from Boom Studios, with a creative team of Sarah Galley, Pius Back, Roman Titov? Shoot, why can't I really should know these things. I've been pronouncing difficult names my whole life. I know people from lots of countries. I should know this. I'm sorry, Roman. I apologize. And finally, of course, on letters, Cardinal Wright. The review? Whoa. Well, the public perception of the moneyed class has definitely taken some hits in recent years, but Eat the Rich number 3 posits a situation where things are so much worse than we thought, with murder, cannibalism, and the exploitation of vulnerable populations as the opening act. It may shock you to find that it gets worse in the best possible way. This book, at its heart, is horrifying. A Martha's Vineyard-style vacation community for the 1% called Crestfall Bluffs has a culture unto itself. Employees are signed to long-term contracts which provide world-class health care, benefits, and salaries to people who otherwise would not have that kind of access. This enormous largesse comes at a cost. At retirement, the employees are murdered and eaten by their employers. A young woman called Joey learns this horrible history and how it used to be worse from the mother of her boyfriend Aster, a scion of this legacy. The flashbacks are upsetting, both in their kinder moments and in moments of bloody savagery. The last reveal is a jaw-dropper. Sarah Galley's script intentionally plays the genteel perception of the ultra-rich with the bloodthirsty realities they apply. The writing here is subversive and coy. The visuals, presented by Pius Back, Roman Titov, going with it, and Cardinal Ray, imply more than they show, which makes the horror all the more creepy. The only possible criticism here will be that most of the supporting characters, especially Aster, who seems particularly checked out, are not getting well fleshed out. The put-upon nanny, aware of her fate, is glimpsed here, but not heard, as she was in previous issues. That makes sense for the arguable antagonists here, or is it the system that's really the problem? But for the narrative, it diminishes the impact to have so few perspectives with so many faces. Still, this is a book that will likely freak you out, and if you like being freaked out, that's worth slapping down your greenbacks and grabbing a copy. That rating would be buy. The next section of our reviews is called Honorable Mentions. It's for books that are good, but maybe not exactly good enough for you to go on down to Coinbase and get yourself some Dogecoin out to pay for it. I don't even know if you can pay for comics with Dogecoin, but, you know, whatever, roll with it. Starting out there, we find Rise of the Djinn, number 1, from Zenoscope Entertainment, with creative team of Kevin Grievous, Elmo Bondoc, Jorge Cortez, and Taylor Esposito. With an overlay of magic and a heavy dose of personal tragedy, Rise of the Djinn, number 1, introduces a hardscrabble police detective to a much more unpredictable world hiding under the veneer of normalcy. This issue never lets its foot off the gas pedal and delivers a thoughtful and interesting take on a person taking on an extraordinary fight while losing their innocence. Detective Tamara Brazil is having a pretty awful time. Trauma on top of tragedy haunts her every step as a serial killer named Corin Massey stalks the city. Her husband falls under the killer's blade, and then she gets diagnosed with terminal cancer as well. While this happens, she begins to doubt her own sanity, seeing horrid, quote, this part's a quote, horrid creatures, sometimes with blue and ash-gray skin covered in tattoos, close quote. Horrible injuries, terrible circumstances, all of them fail to extinguish the determination and focus of Brazil to stop Massey. Writer Kevin Grievous delivers on characterization here as we get in-depth depictions of her grief, her rage, and her frustration. The artwork from Elmo Bondoc, Jorge Cortez, and Taylor Esposito is enormously enjoyable, making Brazil a fully realized character with competence, skill, and attractiveness without being exploitative. Likewise, they also do some great things. There's a graffiti-filled panel here that's poster-worthy, and that's definitely worth seeing. The criticism here is the magical overlay. There is a war between ancient magical beings, and this issue does very little to explain its stakes, origins, or rationales. Likewise, the supporting characters share none of the depth or nuance of the lead, making them passive bystanders. There's a lot to like about this book, and when it's one day part of a collection, this may stand a little stronger. As for now, it's moving at high speeds, but the limp is noticeable, so the rating would be honorable mention. The next section of our reviews is called the Meh Pile. It's for books, I mean, they happen, but I'm not going to remember them, so I bet that you probably aren't going to remember them either. So there we would find books like Masters of the Universe Revelation number 4, Black Manta number 2, Shazam number 4, Suicide Squad number 8, Superman Son of Kal-El number 4. I'm also so sorry. He just makes really bad decisions in there. Dungeons and Dragons Mindbreaker number 1, Star Wars Adventures Volume 2 number 11, Star Wars Adventures Ghost of Vader's Castle number 5. I'm a soft target for Star Wars, so that you should be able to hit me with that. Death of Doctor Strange number 2, Fantastic Four number 37, Phoenix Song Echo number 1, that was almost bad enough to be out of here, but I'm already forgetting it. Star Wars The High Republic number 10, Thor number 18, United States of Captain America number 5, and Gun Honey number 2. Lots of forgettable books there. Sorry about that. So, the final section of our reviews is called No, Just No, and it's for books that are abjectly terrible and should not be purchased under any circumstance, and I'm sorry to tell you, there are two books here. Let us begin with Flash number 775 from DC Comics with the creative team of Jeremy Adams, Fernando Passarin, Matt Ryan, Jeremy Cox, and Steve Wands. If you ever found the character Naruto annoying and tedious, Flash number 775 gives you a chance to find Wally West even less charming and more grating. With guest appearances from Superman, Mr. Terrific, and a big bad that's menacing the televised Stargirl, that all sounds like it'd be a big deal, but it's not. This issue goes a long way for very little reward at the end. A strange glaive with an odd energy signature has crash-landed into a city street and become inextricably embedded, blocking traffic and causing an upset. The Flash calls in Mr. Terrific, Mr. Terrific calls in Superman, but no one can seem to get it to budge from its spot in the middle of the lane. Likewise, suddenly everyone starts to be testy with Wally's easygoing, carefree manner. If you've got a decent sense of DC Comics history, or again, are watching Courtney Whitmore on TV, you know exactly what's on the way and why this is happening. This Jeremy Adams script not only ended poorly, but stumbled along the way, with Wally West understanding very little about what was happening around him and not actually overcoming any challenges he faced. You certainly can't lay any of the blame at the feet of Fernando Passarin, Matt Ryan, Jeremy Cox, or Steve Wands, who turned in a book that looks as good as anything on the stands. The sheer unlikability of Wally West combined with being bad at his job of being a hero and the exhausting ending leaves a book that should have stopped before it started. So that rating would be no, just no. The last book in our reviews today, oh boy, is X-Men The Trial of Magneto number 3 from Marvel Comics with the creative team of Leah Williams, Lucas Wernick, David Messina, Edgar Delgado, and Clayton Cowles on letters. When you're led astray by the title alone, you are likely to hit a lot of challenges along the road, and X-Men The Trial of Magneto number 3 presents exactly that kind of challenge. With no body, no evidence, no clear charge for the Master of Magnetism, and the Avengers milling around like bench players, trying your patience is the only kind of trial going on here. In the closing moments of the 79 issues of the Hellfire Gala, Wanda Maximoff was murdered, and the prevailing belief was that Magneto did it. Of course, had anyone read the actual issue where they interacted, they would immediately not pass the sniff test on that one, but to be fair, it doesn't seem like Krakoa gets any shipments from Diamond Comics distributors. The mutant government, such as it is, rushed to put Magneto on trial without a clear investigation, without representation, and so on. That was complicated when the Avengers showed up to collect Wanda's body, since Wanda is not a mutant or something. Sure. And further complicated this by Magneto skipping the line for the resurrection cue and bringing back a version of Wanda that was from back when she was married to the Vision, before she had kids, and is wildly uninformed about a lot of things, including her role in the death of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. Yeah. If you've read this far, you might be saying, that all sounds patently ridiculous. While you'd be right, that's not even close to the patently preposterous final page reveal of the true culprit, a leap in logic that defies credulity. It's hard to say what this Leah Williams script was trying to do or why it was doing it or why it was released, but here we are. To their credit, Lucas Wernick, David Messina, Edgar Delgado, and Clayton Cowles all turned in a rock star performance trying to get lipstick on this pig, but we all ended up splashed in mud at the end of the day. More disturbing is that there are checks notes, two more issues of this to get through, in that 60% of the story has been bad thus far. That's more like a threat than anything else. This train isn't stopping, and we're all just being dragged along the track, so the rating would be no, just no. Even with the stinkers, we had some stuff to enjoy, so if you're going out into the world with your mask on and vaccinated, please pick up some comics or head to your local digital comic seller. Speaking of comics on sale, on November 24th, you will find Project Wildfire from myself and its creator, Quinn McGowan, that will be available in comic stores everywhere from Second Sight Publishing and Legends Press. Also, for free throughout the fall, you can check False Flag on operative.net. We're in the season finale right now, and it is getting interesting. That's at operative.net for free every Friday. False Flag, subversive adventure fiction that's like if G.I. Joe and professional wrestling had a baby on a world where there are actual superheroes. Feel free to check that out. Thank you again to Mo and Tawala for having me here. I love, love, love being able to speak to you. I look forward to speaking to you in the future. Please wear your masks. Please get vaccinated. And I'll talk to you next week.
Hey guys, Mo Kelly here. The new daily Nerdorama podcast is featured on iHeartRadio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast feed to get your daily dose of nerd news. Also available on iTunes, Spreaker, and all the top podcasting apps. It's free and perfect for everyone in your nerd family.
Nerdorama is produced by Tawala Sharp and continues to be a segment on The Mo Kelly Show. Weekends on KFI Los Angeles. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Nerdorama News.
Until next time, keep it comic.